You're listening to Tucson Tech Talk with your host, Aaron Moss, on Tucson Business Radio X.
Welcome to this episode of Tucson Tech Talk. I'm your host, Aaron Moss, broadcasting from the Tucson Business Radio X studio in the Stewart Title Building on Broadway in Tucson, Arizona. Our focus today on the show is technology in, we can say, taxes, finance, money, things like that, and how we've understood those to affect technology in the past couple of years. We have two very qualified guests with us today that is going to help us to understand how this technology has affected accounting, finance, industry over the years. On my left, I'd like to introduce an accounting graduate at the from the University of Arizona and currently a shareholder leading the tax and accounting divisions at RNA CPAs. She specializes in tax compliance and consulting with clients in a variety of fields, including aerospace, manufacturing, restaurant, and hospitality industries. In addition to her work in the fields of tax and accounting consulting, she is also accredited in business valuations. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to introduce Amy Chavez to the program.
Thank you for having me.
And to my right, our second guest has over 40 years in public accounting, giving him a very broad and diverse background in accounting, involving clients from small emerging businesses all the way to those that are better established and larger. He's concentrated in consulting to small businesses and the numerous aspects of assistance that emerging and startup businesses have. He has considerable experience in various phases of the public accounting, including management consulting, sophisticated income taxes, estate tax planning, as well as resolving retirement and financial planning issues. He is also familiar with incorporation and pension issues. He's celebrating over 35 years as the managing member of Flowers, Rieger & Associates. Ladies and gentlemen, we want to introduce Michael Flowers to the program.
Aaron, it's great to be here. Thank you.
Okay. So, by the way, it's Rieger that is spelled R-I-E-G-E-R.
Certainly.
Okay.
Flowers Rieger.
Okay. So, so just to kick things off on this subject of how accounting has affected technology in the years, you know, we have all these apps and applications. People can download these things on their phone, on their computer that will help them with their taxes for their personal life or their business. In your experience, because we have lots of experiences right here in this room, are any of these applications any good? Or should someone still be trying to hire a traditional CPA? Anything?
The applications are as good as the user. And just because an application has tax software or tax software, it's called Lacerte. And we spend about $20,000 a year on maintaining and updating, and it's a national service that thousands of CPAs use. And just because we have the software doesn't mean that somebody could come in and fill out a tax return. So the software, when you know how to use it properly, is unbelievably useful. And I don't think there's 1% of the preparers out there anymore that are doing it manually. At one point in time, it was manual. At one point in time, it was the software cards you would fill out. It's called FastTax. You would fill out forms. It would be sent out to a processing center. The tax return would come back incorrect. You fill out some more forms. And that process has now turned to immediately I can do a 3 or 4 year projection and I can change numbers rather quickly. So there are apps, QuickBooks, Quicken, TurboTax are very valuable software applications and products. However, it really depends on the user. And in both Amy and my mind, there's no substitute for having a CPA if you're dealing with your income taxes or especially your business taxes. And the more complicated it is, the more you're going to need a CPA.
Mm-hmm. So when, how would somebody know if they are, if they should be doing the CPA traditionally, or if one of these apps is actually good enough for what they're doing?
Well, I think that all depends. I mean, I have a lot of people come in to find out that exact answer, and I always try to be really honest with them, because you don't want to I never want to charge somebody a fee if I'm not providing them a benefit. So if it is somebody who's coming in and they have a simple W-2 tax return and they don't have anything other than the standard and they're comfortable using a computer software like TurboTax, that's probably the best fit for them. But as soon as you start having anything like a small business or any kind of investments, that's when you get into, even if you think that you can plod through the software, at some point you're going to want some consulting or some guidance. And that's really where the CPAs come in. It's not just in plugging numbers into the software. If that's all we did, then we're going to be obsolete. It's a lot more about the consulting and the helping.
I think what you mean is like data entry.
Right.
Because that's what a lot of these apps are. They ask you a question, you insert your data, mm-hmm. and then you get a Bing result at the end, you know?
Right.
So how are new technologies impacting how tax returns are prepared? And is, like your company, RNA CPA, mm-hmm. are they addressing those issues, those changes?
So, you know, technology changes everything, and it changes it in inches and it changes it in miles. And one of the things that we've experienced over the last, I would say, 13 years since we've decided to go paperless at our firm is moving the firm constantly and being aware of technologies that can make us more efficient so that we can spend more time guiding the client as opposed to the data entry, as the way you put it. Mm-hmm. But the main goal in all of it is always, as we're turning that ship, as we're turning that dial, not to have the client feel that we're going through all of these technology changes on the other side. And especially, I don't know how much you've experienced this, but in the last 5 years, I mean, there's so much available out there. And so it turns into one of those things where if you're running a tax division of a firm, you know, how much do you hold back? How much do you want to see if something is going to work for another firm before you try it versus if I wait, are we going to be the last ones? You know, it's always that tipping point between, you know, being the first one out there and waiting for something tried and true.
I would say our general experience is we try very seriously not to be the first ones to try the newest product.
Or the last.
Exactly.
First or last. Definitely first and last. But what we've noticed is sometimes when software or compete, every year we get an offer from a competing company to have them be our software provider. Mm-hmm. And every year we tell them no, because it's not only the software. So, for example, if you came in, we're spending $20,000, and some firms will say, Mike, we'll charge you $10,000. That $10,000 savings is going to be eaten up the first month that we use that software, and the amount of training. Downtime, mm-hmm. reloading,
finding
proven, making sure that what they said they were going to slide across did slide across. And it's an unbelievable transition. So it's not a cost type market for in the CPA. We're very loyal, and I'm sure Amy's firm, whatever software they're using, they're very loyal to that. Even if you cut the price 50%, most CPAs are going to say, we don't trust you. Even if you were the best software, all our staff knows this software. And if you said it's 10 grand, however, these 8 forms are done differently, we're going to lose that in time, and we're going to have more non-chargeable time and more research and more studying to get up to speed. So we've stayed with the same software company since probably for the last 20, 25 years.
And, you know, I noticed that, you know, CPA firms, they're very loyal to their systems, okay? Because you have to, because your customers, if they've been filing things, you know, going back 10, 20 years, and you're on a different system now, how are you going to go back and, you know, retrieve those things and pull them to your current system, okay, with a couple of clicks of a button?
The biggest change, Amy was mentioning, in the last 13 years. Again, I've been doing this since I graduated in 76. I started as a CPA in 78. After 2 years' experience, I got my CPA.
I was born in 78.
Well, here we go. I was doing tax returns when you were born. That's embarrassing, but I've started in New York City as a CPA and been involved in taxes all my life. And we have a really strong opinion that the tax software companies, like the one that we use, invested millions and millions of dollars, especially most recently with the new tax law. Mm-hmm. The new tax law that was recently enacted, basically effective 2018, was the most dramatic tax law change I've seen in my entire career. Mm-hmm. And that's the Reagan 86 Act and its other dramatic tax changes. But the most recent tax law change was the most dramatic change and the most significant effect on even the physical forms of the tax returns. Used to be a four-page form. Now it's all on page one with schedule 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Mm-hmm. So they said they'd get it down to postcard size. It's like a postcard with 15 asterisks, and all the asterisks are the other forms that support it. So with the new tax law, I think that's where everybody's super cautious, and nobody would make a move from the software company. Unless somebody went with the software company, and with the new tax law, wait, all of a sudden this company isn't maintaining the way they have traditionally because they didn't hire enough staff and they didn't pay enough attention. But Lacert is one of the biggest ones. And, you know, as you get down and down on the list, they're not investing as much in technology and staff to make sure that they have all the changes with the new tax law.
So I'm sorry, what were you saying?
No, I was just going to say that I think that a lot of our focus, at least at our firm, and you can speak for your firm, Michael, but a lot of our focus hasn't been in our actual tax software and making a change from that, because as Michael said, with every tax law change that we deal with, also switching up our tax software would make us less efficient and less available for our clients. But where our focus has been is on helping the clients with businesses get their numbers cleaner, have them make more sense throughout the year. And that's where we're employing a lot more technologies, is in trying to, you know, really partner with our clients a little bit more throughout the year and hold their hand so that once we get to tax time, that's when we're making tax decisions. We're not sitting there trying to reconcile a bank account, which you have to do in order to have the numbers correct, but it's not, you're not going to get a client to feel good because you reconciled their bank account. You get a client to feel good because you can give them some advice on how to turn that dial or move, you know, what they're doing to make them more profitable.
Or make the, or make or save them some money.
Right.
That's the big thing. But so you mentioned that some of these softwares. What software is maybe your firm acquiring or investigating to take advantages of some of these technologies?
Well, you know, we have what we call our CAS department. It's Client Accounting Solutions. So we're trying to basically replace the old version of bookkeeping with what we call accounting solutions. Instead of a service, it's a solution, because you don't want to have to monitor it. You want to make sure that your numbers are good. You want somebody who enjoys that to be doing it so that you can run your business, because that's what you enjoy. So over the last couple of years, we've really been looking at, you know, different online and cloud softwares in order to be able to have them communicate with each other. Everything to linking payroll in with QuickBooks Online, in with different types of expense reimbursements, so that if you have somebody in the field, they're scanning a receipt with their phone. They're not trying to collect a whole bunch of paper and give it to you at the end of the month. So it's more about trying to help our clients be a little bit more on time and using different software solutions to do that.
Now, there's a back office, and then there's like a client end to that to a lot of these softwares.
Yes.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so do you see that? Do you see that actually having a positive outcome? Or is it just a dream at this time?
If you would have asked me that last year, I would have said, well, last year and a half, I would have said it wasn't a dream, it was a nightmare. But once we started...
A nightmare is a dream. But
yeah.
It's a bad dream.
Once we started to work out a lot of the kinks in it and make it a little bit more fluid so that the client was having a better experience, that's when everything started to kind of change for us. And I would say that, you know, it has been really positive. I've got a restaurant client who started with us a year and a half ago, and there were a lot of bumps in the first 4 or 5 months trying to get everything linked and everything working. And now that client's extremely happy because they can go in at any time and see where their cash flows are at. Mm-hmm. You know, the power of information shouldn't be underestimated for an entrepreneur.
So I can see a parallel kind of going through here, because we've done this show several times with different industries, but there's always a period of training. And that kind of goes through with any business. Anytime you start something new, a new major software for an accounting firm, there's got to be some sort of training period that you can do in your downtime. Before the show, we were talking about when's the best month of downtime of a CPA. Right. Sometimes it's never. Sometimes, you know, we talked about the summertime, but maybe the summertime is the best time to be maybe looking or even trying to implement some of these services on a trial basis. What do you think?
Aaron, appreciate that as CPAs, we deal with pretty much every industry and every size business. I mean, at our firm, we don't do the super large clients, but we've touched probably 150 different types of businesses as a rough estimate of the different clientels, and everything from an owner that's doing some sort of accounting to the wife who's never seen in a bookkeeping or accounting course, and they're doing the books, to one of my clients hired a 16-year-old kid, and we've had tremendous problems.
Oh, my.
And I told him, please don't do that. Well, I trust them. And, you know, the dilemma in Tucson in particular, and I'd say the smaller cities, having grown up in New York, the business community is a little bit more sophisticated. But in Tucson, there's a number of entrepreneurs, and just because you're a great cook doesn't mean you should
open
a restaurant.
Your own restaurant. Yep.
And in all industries, we have those type people that, hey, I'm a really good electrician and I can build a business, but don't ask me anything about accounting. And so we deal with that type client. So there's no like typical CPA client that they've been well trained and they've went through college and they've had some finance courses. If you have that type client versus somebody who's relatively even older and been doing it for 20 years, maybe he's not doing it right. We tend to get a lot of clients that start off with bookkeeping services when they're doing maybe 50 grand a year, and then 10 years later they're doing 700 grand a year and they're still with the bookkeeping service and way outgrown their capabilities. So as Amy says, that's where you come in. And recently we had one that was a sole proprietor paying a tremendous amount of self-employment tax with no pension plan. And in a one-hour meeting, I suggested that we create an LLC, put her and her husband on the payroll, and they start to fund the pension plan. And I demonstrated about $70,000 in tax savings in a one-hour meeting, because they've had a bookkeeper that essentially tell me what happened yesterday and I'll put it on the form. And Amy and I are more interested in, that's what's happened yesterday, let's think about next year, and let's see, if this was my business, what would I do?
Absolutely.
I'd be an LLC, I would have an S-Corp, I would put myself on a payroll. Very simple procedural things, and at the end of the day, that old business compared to the new business is going to have another $60,000, $70,000 in cash flow.
Now, see, all of that you just mentioned can't be done on an app.
No, it can't, and it never will be. And it never will be. And even if you're doing your own bookkeeping and you're the QuickBooks expert of everything and you've done all your bookkeeping and you're ready to do a tax return, there's no, well, I'm going to be bold, but I don't think there's any bookkeeper out there that can compete with a CPA that's been trained in taxes. Because we do this year round, we have 40 hours of education, and we're required, and we're regulated by the state, Arizona's state CPA Board of Board of Accountancy. So we're very regulated. We're very into it. So again, if you have an app, and we're dealing really in the QuickBooks accounting area. We'll talk about other apps a little bit later. But in that particular arena, which Amy and I are tremendously comfortable in, there's no doubt that you're going to need a CPA if you have any business of size, because the complicated new tax laws and the amount of savings that are available should certainly be taken advantage of.
So let's say that there is somebody out there that wants to start a business. At what point should they actually contact a CPA? Should they do that before?
Yeah, absolutely before.
Is there a such thing as being too early? Or
no.
No. No.
There was one situation where a client came in too early, and this is just humorous for an aside. My partner had a client come in because they were wondering about the tax consequences of all the lottery money. And he was like, wow. And they came in for about an hour and a half, and they're like, well, what do we do with this? What do we do? And then my partner finally said, well, how much money did you win in the lottery? They said, oh, no, we haven't won yet, but when we do win, we just want to know. And I said, I think they came in too early. So that, when you asked about an early story, and I still laugh to this day, but it took my partner about an hour to say, well, how much money did you actually win? Oh, no, we're just planning when we do win. But if you're thinking of a business, there is such a thing as early if you're just, hey, I'm going to open a restaurant someday in the next 5 or 10 years.
Okay.
You're probably not that serious. But if you're getting on the doorsteps, then it's very appropriate. Hey, Mike, and in our office, we don't charge for an initial consultation. Mm-hmm. So if somebody wants to come into us and talk to us about their new business, they're certainly welcome to. And at that point in time, we would say, hey, maybe you want to form an LLC. Maybe you want to make sure you have a payroll company or you know how to do payroll. Maybe you want to buy QuickBooks. We'll get your federal ID. And there's a whole process that, again, Amy and I are like doctors with x-rays. Once we have the x-rays, we know what to tell them. Oh. And most clients provide an x-ray of some sort when they tell you what their general outline is. But you shouldn't. For 1 hour, and Amy, I think, seen this in her career as well, in an hour or two, we can solve a tremendous amount of problems as it relates to a new business that would take the owners hours and hours and hours of research.
Okay. Absolutely. And then never underestimate the fact that we have contacts in town. I love, you know, getting somebody's personality and setting them up with the right investment banker or the right attorney to draw up the agreement. I'm sure you have the same thing. Everything comes down to making sure that they're taken care of.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever experienced something where how these technologies are actually affecting the clients? Because they're, let's say that you had a client that's been your client for say 20 years, and now you're moving into this now more tech type of software. How would you move them from doing it old school style to now? Do you find yourself having to do
In some cases, you don't. We have some older clients that we send out our request for their information electronically. We used to do that through the mail, and some of them are, Mike, don't email that stuff to me because I'll never print it out. I'll never figure it out. So on our database, we've sorted, and there's 20 to 25 clients that we physically mail to. And let me just do another aside. When we talk about apps and software, there was a recent fraud by MyPayrollHR.com for about $16 million, which was a cloud-based software company that would do payroll. And essentially, the money would go to MyPayrollHR.com. I'm pretty sure that's the website. Yeah, there's a FBI and an IRS investigation going on because we just heard from a client we're helping to fill out the form.
So this place was hacked.
They were a payroll company, and essentially, let's say it was my payroll, and they said, Mike, you had $2,000 of withholdings, and you need to take $4,000 from your employees' checks, and you need to send that in 3 days. We're going to handle all that for you. So if my payroll was Friday, on Friday, we're going to take that $4,000 out of your account to the tune of $16 million collectively. That company then had another company they dealt with. They took their fee out and said, all right, we have $15,500,000 worth of payroll that needs to go to the IRS. And they would wire the money to another company that would disperse it through the IRS and everybody's accounts will be credited timely. Mm. September 6th, September 8th recently, the CEO of the company called and said, don't wire that money to that account where they disperse it all. Put it in this new account. We set up this new account. And they wired the money to another company, another account, took the money out of that account, and $16 million worth of payroll taxes and payroll withholdings and employee paychecks was defrauded out of the public.
Interesting.
And my client, who I didn't know, I got an email saying, Mike, I just had a, my payroll didn't clear and it's a fraud issue. And I was like, oh my goodness.
Yeah, I had to deal with a fraud issue with my bank just this morning.
Yeah, if you deal with fraud, but this is, and there's no recourse. My understanding is their insurance isn't going to cover it. And obviously the payroll company isn't going to cover it. And there's no relief. I don't believe we took a quick law in the tax law. But if you give your money to ADP, and I don't want to – they're a wonderful payroll company. But if they have the money and they don't send it to the IRS, the client's still responsible, not ADP.
Is that right?
I can't quote that, but we started to do some preliminary research on that. But you have to be careful when you just – my client was susceptible to, mypayrollhr.com. And they do everything. And you know, an ADP was right across the street, a billion-dollar company.
But then you think everything's okay, and then it isn't.
Right.
And your comment, Amy, anything with the software that you're currently using, how it's affecting the customers, your client base?
Well, I think that, again, I hate always giving the answer, but it depends. I mean, we have some clients who have been with our firm for over 50 years, and you know, trying to get them to now be cloud-based and all of it's not going to happen. But, you know, the newer clients that we bring on, if that's just the way that it's always been since they've started with us, you know, there's a different kind of engagement factor that we get. But in addition to that, I mean, there are some other clients that we've had for a really long time. And if you can show them that it makes their life easier and you move it in inches, they're perfectly fine with it. So...
excellent, excellent points, both of you.
Always fascinating and always ahead of the game. The Computer Doctor is Aaron Moss on Tucson Business Radio X.
We're talking with Amy Chavez and Michael Flowers, both very talented and very qualified people to talk about how technology has affected the taxation and accounting finance industries. And we're talking about how these applications and these apps have affected the industry in all you know, in the past and even concurrently, how they affect the offices, how they affect the clients, and how people are being received. We even showed how sometimes it can even cause problems. Okay, so sometimes, you know, from a technological background that I come from, I'm always thinking about the security of things. How secure are people's information in these systems, especially the cloud systems? You're sending them documents. Even just to sign a document now, you now just have, you know, type in your name and then select your signature, you know, or whichever style that you like.
Which
seemed, when I first saw that, it was hilarious to me. But if I can go back to Amy and do another question about what are some of the challenges of some of the newer technologies when they're first introduced? We kind of covered that a little bit, but you know, when a new technology is introduced or even a new law, how does that set you guys back, or how do you deal with that?
You know, I think that Michael alluded to this earlier. The biggest challenge that we have whenever there's a new technology or a new law is training, understanding it enough and getting in front of it that you can train your staff to deal with it and you can train your clients on how to utilize it and how to have it be beneficial for them as opposed to another change, another headache, another thing that we have to go through.
Do these software companies, do they give training like maybe like YouTube, like some sort of YouTube video type training of how to use the software on their side?
They'll give physical training or online or webinars, if you would. But we love change. We love tax law changes because it generates conversations. It generates, actually it generates more work the more the tax laws change, because as the tax laws change, clients are more and more reliant on you. And with the most recent tax law change last year, that was the most amount of money our firm spent on continuing education.
Well, and I don't know about you, Michael, but I've never been more popular at a party than I was last year.
Right. There you go.
Everybody wanted to talk to the accountant for some reason.
Everybody wants to know, you know, how does it affect me? And so from that perspective, it's good. But the good news for CPA firms in general, if you have a back office or I don't know that there's a firm out there. Maybe some of the big four accounting firms have their own software for tax returns. But I think predominantly, even Amy's firm, as large as they are, they're probably using a third party to process their tax returns. And that in and of itself is an industry. And there's very few CPA firms. Oh, the tax
that can
law
take
changed.
It on like that.
Let me go change the software and let me go see what happens. We'd be out of business if we'd have to maintain the back office. So from the front office, we just need to be capable. And what's surprising is on occasions, we as the CPAs are calling the software company and say, wait, you haven't gotten that exactly right. And in this particular instance, and then they always go, well, there's an override on box 7 and you can do an override. And, you know, we find exceptions, but that just tells you our skill level that we're not strictly relying on the software. Because sometimes you know what the answer is and the software won't give it to you. And then
as an option. Yeah.
80% of the time there's a box or something we didn't do correctly in the software, but 20% of the time, no, the software company is wrong, and now they either have to do an override or in some cases, as we have software companies, every week or every day almost during tax season we're getting updates. And in the middle of doing somebody's tax return, I'll say, wait, don't finish this return because this line has been affected and you have to go back to the update. So the software companies, where they're spending tons of money on R&D and overhead, and that's why they can get $20,000 for their software for one firm, a 10-person firm, times, you know, probably 10, 20,000 clients. So they have enough offices to make sure they're getting it right.
Right. So the risks for the clients. So if a person wants to do their own accounting, their own bookkeeping, and their own taxes, I know what your answer is. It's going to depend.
Don't.
But
no, you want to do your own surgery? You want to pull your own teeth out? You know. I mean, what I'm saying is that accounting and taxes are that type industry that the general layperson's going to cost themselves money. Our motto with our clients is we're going to save you more than we charge you. If we charge you $500 for a return and I don't find $500 worth of savings, or why don't you fund an IRA, why don't you have your kid on the payroll, why don't you do this, why don't you do that, then as Amy says, we're not going to do a W-2 type client, charge them $300 and we didn't do anything. That's what CPAs have
I've heard
integrity about them, that we don't want to charge money unless we can justify. In some cases, way too worried about it. But, you know, in most cases, the client wants it right. We're going to get it right. We're going to save you money. And I think Amy can also attribute the fact that we save more than we charge clients.
Right.
Well,
now,
one of the things, I'm sorry, but one of the things that Michael touched on was, and it definitely was a huge deal this year, was say that you do decide that you're going to do your own taxes and you've been doing them for 5 years and you're perfectly happy. Well, all of a sudden the 2018 tax law comes around. And as we're preparing the returns, we're noticing that the software is not keeping up with what we've actually learned, because this year it was rolled out so late. You know, if you're a lay person and you're not getting all of the classes and you don't have all of your, you know, your coworkers with all of their specific knowledge kind of looking over your shoulder too, if you don't have that kind of community of knowledge around you, you're not going to notice that you just missed a $20,000 deduction. You're just going to file it because that's how you've always filed it.
It can cost you. So so when does a client know that they're in over their head? They're saying, you know what?
I think most clients know it when they see their business profit and loss and balance sheet, and okay, put that on a tax return. What are you talking? Put that on a tax return. I don't even know what a tax return looks like. So,
right.
And as Amy mentioned, the new tax law provided a 20% qualified business income deduction. 20% off. So if I made $100,000, I'm only going to pay tax on $80,000 if I go to my CPA that fills out the form properly. If I've done it last year and I made $102,000 and this year I made $100,000, I'm not going to know there's a 20% deduction for that. Mm-hmm. So that client, $20,000 deduction, you're in a 30% bracket. That's a $6,000 savings. If a CPA charged you $3,000 to do that, you still have $3,000. So
okay.
It's the numbers, and it generally makes sense to see a CPA. Again, I did one job. They paid me $10,000. I have no expenses. It was just some speaking engagement. You can possibly figure that out to put it on Schedule C, but then you have self-employment tax issues. You got the possibility of a pension plan. And you got the possibility that, did I take my 20% deduction, because that qualified for a 20% deduction. So even a very simple one transaction, I think Amy and I could find ways to save you money. Why don't you put put 10 grand of that in a solo 401k, don't pay any taxes. Mm-hmm. What do you mean? I can do that? Sure, you can do that. Mm-hmm. So it's that kind of stuff that makes sense.
So this the accounting software that's used by your two respective offices, what kind of IT support locally? Because do you employ? And the reason why I ask that is because the software is only as good as, you know, the actual systems that are in your offices, your internet connection, because you mentioned the cloud. You know, if you have an unstable connection there, and you got a client on the phone wanting information, you're hitting the button on your computer and you're getting that roll around thing
right.
going. What do you do now? Do you have some sort of, like, what kind of IT support
We are very lucky to have an in-house IT person. And I can't even tell you all of the initials and certifications that he has. Mm. So we're extremely lucky in that regard. And I've been there long enough that before he was there, we had somebody else who wasn't as adamant about staying on top of everything as he is. And we had a lot of downtime. You know, the computer's going down, as you were saying, that circle going around and around and around. Well, you basically are just hearing money drain, just drain away. So the person that we have now, he specializes in security.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that very comforting, because we have a lot of people's information and we take that very seriously. And we're as I've said, I think I've said it three times now, we're incredibly lucky to have somebody else who specializes in that and takes it just as seriously as we do.
Excellent. And
that's an overhead cost. I mean, that's part of the cost of your tax return in Amy's firm, that somebody's providing that service. We have an outside consultant that's been with us since 1984, approximately.
Oh, my.
And he's put in all our software, and he works with a number of other CPA firms. Very familiar with all the search software, very familiar with our server. And I don't know how he does it, because I would never want his job. Trey, I'm sorry about this, but I'd never want your job. He's on call, and if we have an issue, Trey will show up. You know, Mike, I got three, you know, I got to get two more emergencies, but I'll be there at 5, or I'll be there Saturday, I'll be there at midnight. He has a key to our office, he has a key to my house, because I have problems at my home computer. And hey, Trey, you know, he just was in and installing speakers for me. I told you how much technology I do.
Oh, yeah.
I got some new speakers, I wanted to download the drivers, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, Trey, I'll be up at your house at 4 o'clock. So Trey's been a friend of the firm, knows the firm, and knows other CPAs, and you can't get along without that. And occasionally, if it's a software problem, it's unbelievably frustrating. Like Saturday, our tax software went down, and some one or two of the employees went home, and it was like, well, it's only down for an hour. But they, oh, the software's down, I got nothing to do type thing. Yeah. So
it's the accountant's snow day.
Yeah. It's our snow day when the software goes down.
Yeah, it must be that way. But, you know, on the flip side, speaking from an IT background, whenever a new major client comes my way, I have to give them a disclaimer. It's going to take me, you know, somewhere between a month, sometimes even up to 4 months, just to get up to speed to how everything works. Sometimes, I have a large contract with a school, a charter school, and they have a total of 4 server rooms in several different buildings, and. For a while, I thought that one particular, this is where the internet was coming in for the whole thing. And then one day, the internet does go down. I reset that one box, but in turn, it was the phones. I knocked out the phones instead of the, so, but it took me the guy that already had the whole system mapped in his head, he was gone. Right. I got no information from him. Okay. But it took for something failing for me to know, you know, what the solution was.
I think what we do traditionally is we use QuickBooks because everybody's using QuickBooks.
Mm-hmm. It's a big client-based system.
QuickBooks is the preferred software, I think, for 90% of accountants, just because there used to be Peachtree and some other software that was a little bit more custom. And a little bit more, hey, I hired a new bookkeeper and she doesn't know Peachtree. Mm. Now you got a complete disconnect that, hey, I got great software and the person who knew it really well, they left me. And now it's almost like custom software and who's going to learn this? And am I going to find that person? And once I'm invested in that person, I hope to God they don't leave. So everything we do now is sort of QuickBooks based, because if the client's staff or a data entry person leaves, it's very easy to find another person. And it's very easy to train somebody on QuickBooks because now all the CPAs and CPA firms know that program. So they sort of did what McDonald's did with the hamburger. You would think nobody could have the best hamburger or sell billions and billions of hamburgers. Mm-hmm. And nobody could have the right software. When we first came out, I was back in the manual days, and CPAs made probably a third of their living just doing bookkeeping for clients. Mm. And that whole business has evaporated from $500 a month to now, well, the software mic's $100. How are you going to charge me $500 a month?
Yeah.
So that's how technology's changed. And at one time, books, they call them books because they were physical ledgers, and all right, you gave me $8. I'm putting $8 in cash. I'm going to credit sales. And at the end of the month, I'll add up all the sales. I'll add up all my cash, and I'll physically put it. You know, it was a very, very monotonous process. There were companies that had accounts payable departments of hundreds of people just paying bills. And now it's all
back
automated.
In my day, I used to fill out my accounts payable slip to be faxed over to California so they could put it in a book. So they could
fax, what's that?
Yeah. I know.
But that was a savings, man, a fax. You could actually get this overnight. So the profession has changed. And as I alluded to at one time, tax returns were done with the third-party processing company where I think they curried the tax returns because there wasn't FedEx or anything. I forget. Well, they may have mailed them. You may have mailed it out Monday. They get it Tuesday. They didn't put it Wednesday. You get it back Thursday or Friday, assuming one-day mail, and it was that type process. Now, as I say, it's instantaneous.
Okay. Well, you know, we've talked a lot about the past, and we've talked a lot about the present of this industry. I'd like to just peer into the future. What is in store for the future of accounting, finance, things like that? So as the technologies evolve, what are some things that you believe may be happening in the future when it comes to these things? And also, how secure are a lot of these things?
Well, I mean, if you listen to some of the people in the CPA realm, they're trying to go as far as to say that, you know, basic accounts are going to be replaced with artificial intelligence and all of that. I can't go that far. I don't think that there's any chance that we're going to get to that point. But I do see everything being a little bit more technology focused. Mm. I mean, if you look at how far everything's come in the last 10 years in the entire world, yes, that's impacting accounting. And so we have a lot of different ways that we need to go. But I think that's why we're all, and I don't want to say we're all, I want to let Michael speak for himself, but we're focusing more and more on the consulting side because everything else is starting to feel a little bit more like a commodity to this new generation. It's a tax return. It's just some numbers. So that's where you have to put the focus on the people and the focus on what are you providing with that tax return? Yes, we're keeping you compliant, but what are we giving you? What are we helping you with? And then as far as security is concerned, I think that as long as we stay very cognizant about what's happening, we can hopefully stay on top of it or ahead of it. You know, the same way that before everything was technology-based, there were different ways that, you know, the quote-unquote bad guys were able to get to you. So this is just a different way and a different thought process on keeping people safe.
I see. Just to add a little something to that artificial intelligence, there's at some point we're going to do a show about how technology has affected the law, and we hope to have some hopefully we can even get a judge and maybe some lawyers in here, but there's actually software out there where you plug it in and it'll tell you the likelihood of it being judged as guilty or innocent. And you could actually make little changes of how you present your case, and a program will actually tell you the chances of it being judged innocent or guilty. So,
there'll never be a substitute for consulting, and no. There'll never be a computer that has the ability to do what consultants do.
Right.
I say that in your business, again, I can buy software and it works unbelievably and it corrects itself. I'm still going to need you because it corrected itself, but it's not working.
But corrected itself incorrectly.
Right, and I got a circle. You know, I got a circle. That doesn't mean it's working. So we've been involved. We focused our business on the consultant aspect ever since I started it because that's where the value is in a CPA firm. There's a tremendous value to the tax return itself, but it's what went into that. And once a CPA has taken your raw numbers, and what I love to do is take the client and, you know, when you gave this to me, it showed $150,000 of accrual basis income. You would have owed $60,000 in taxes. Through depreciation, the pension plan, the subchapter S, et cetera, we got that down to $27,000 and you've saved $30,000 in tax. Mm-hmm. Was that worth $2,500? I would hope so. Mm-hmm. And was it worth $5,000? Was it worth $1,000? So we've generated, you know, I've been doing this for 40 years and CPAs have been doing this forever because there's a real value to go into a CPA. And so, I think Amy and I would just like to distinguish, Mike, what's a CPA? Well, a CPA is a certified public accountant. Well, my guy's a CPA. Your guy's probably not a CPA if he doesn't have his name on the firm. About 98% of the CPA firms all have their names. RNA stood for the last name of two of their founding partners. Used to be Michael C. Flowers, CPA. Now it's Flowers Rieger. So whatever firm I was involved in, there'd be a Flowers involved. Amy's name, she's a partner or a shareholder in a firm, but that firm is a firm of individuals that maybe only two people are on the letterhead or the logo, but all the employees are CPAs, or predominantly most of the employees are CPAs. So I think it's important that people know what a certified public accountant is. To be a CPA, you have to not only attend college in Arizona, you have to have a master's degree. You have to pass a four-part rigorous exam that is like the bar. After you pass the exam, generally you need 2 years experience before you can, and working under a mentor. Mm-hmm. And then you are regulated by the Arizona State Board of Accountancy. If you go to an accountant and he messes up your return and he steals your money and does everything and you're looking for an authoritative board, they can't do anything to that person if they're not a CPA. Mm-hmm. But if your CPA did that, then my consequence is I have to go up to the state board and defend myself. If I don't defend myself and actually I did do something egregious, I lose my CPA certificate.
Right.
And then I become that guy that's Mike Flowers, but the accountant, not Mike Flowers, the CPA.
Right. So there's some level of responsibility on the part of the certified public accountant, whereas if it's just...
It's like doctor nurse. I mean, I use that analogy. We're the doctors that we went through to get the appropriate certification to be a doctor, and nurses can be RNs and et cetera, and we have administrative assistants or staff that are studying to be the CPA, and they're somewhat the equivalent of the nurses, but we're the doctors of the industry, and we're the ones that, you know, if you're going to have heart surgery, do you want the non-doctor doing your heart surgery?
Right. I hope not, so. So here's where I call out some advice for our listeners, because there may be some listeners that are not in Tucson or even in the state of Arizona. If somebody is looking to hire a CPA, what are some things to look for? You mentioned to actually see their name as you know, in their office. Like when you say their name, like Aaron
Moss, CPA?
It'd
be on their logo. It's Flowers Rieger CPAs. And every state board of accountancy has a list of who their certified public accountants are. So if, for example, I was investigating Mike Flowers, first of all, you can go online, and we have a very nice online presence, Flowers Rieger and Associates. And I was a small business leader of the year, and we have very nice credentials. But if you went to the Arizona State Board of Accountancies, who are the current CPAs? Mike Flowers, I would show up there. Mm-hmm. Putting Tom Jones, and wait, he's not a CPA. So that's one way.
How would somebody go about finding that out?
If you went to the State Board of Accountancy, there's a list of all
Board of Accountancy.
Arizona State Board of Accountancy, New York State Board, whatever state you're in, there's the equivalent of a State Board of Accountancy that's in charge of that state's CPAs, and there's a list of all the CPAs that you can check against.
Okay, excellent. Any advice, Amy, on what people can do to find out who's the right CPA if they're outside of Arizona?
Well, as Michael said, you can start with the state board, and then once you get a few names, there's nothing better than actually making an appointment, going in and talking to them, because a lot of it is about personal fit. You need to be comfortable. Money is one of the most personal things that you can talk about. You don't even talk about it with your friends most of the time. So you want to make sure that whoever you're asking to guide you is somebody that you're actually comfortable asking to guide you.
Okay.
I would also add, it depends on the size of the firm. I think that's probably the biggest determining factor for, if I'm a relatively small business, I'm probably better off with the small sole proprietor to medium-sized firm. If I'm regional and have five or six offices, the local guy's probably not good enough, and maybe some of the smaller CPA firms aren't good enough. So you generally want to align yourself. The bigger businesses, the national firms align with national CPA firms. We have what's called the Big Four, and the Big Four do IBM and Coke and all the publicly held companies. You get below that. Amy's firm is large at 50 people, and they can handle larger clients than we can. But if you're a Tucson-based client doing $1 million to $5 million, generally you're going to be with a small to medium-sized firm. And if you're doing $50 million, you're going to tend to be in a bigger firm. And if you're doing $1 billion, you're going to be with the national firms.
Okay. And doing things when a business actually starts, we had mentioned earlier that that they should contact a CPA firm early, do this research early, go to this the CPA board of their state. And any other advice for new businesses? Because I know both of you have a lot of the same types of clients. So what other advice can you give to new businesses and entrepreneurs from a CPA standpoint? Anything else?
Well, you know, I think that we've covered it a good majority of it. Just as soon as you're ready to kind of pull that trigger and start your business, get in to see somebody, make sure that you're the right structure, make sure that you have everything set up the way that you need to. At that point, you probably don't even have an accounting software. You might not even know what you need. You know, there's a lot of guidance that you can find.
Okay.
We tend to be the quarterback when somebody comes and, Mike, I'm starting a new business, or me and my partner are starting a new business. And we would generally say, all right, are you going to be a sole proprietor, a partnership, an S corp, a C corp, or an LLC? Wait, that's too many choices. I don't know what I want to be. Well, that's why you're hiring us. But each one of those has a very dramatic tax consequence. And if you want to start your business off correctly, no better substitute than going to see a CPA and getting some advice on the front end.
Would that also include seeing perhaps maybe an attorney or a lawyer out front, because they can consult on those same things?
The acronym we have is ABILITY, which is your accountant, your business lawyer, accountant, banker, insurance agent, and lawyer. ABIL is the four general services that you want to start out your business with. And then it expands from there to a pension administrator, a payroll company, et cetera, et cetera.
As you grow.
As you grow, even out of the gate, you may need some of those services. And who's better to advise you than somebody like myself or Amy that's advised thousands of businesses on how to start, how to complete your return, and how to deal in the financial arena. Again, you're a great cook and you got a great restaurant. Doesn't mean you have a great CPA. Right. And two restaurants doing the exact same amount of business with the exact same amount of income. At the end of the day, it's what you make and what you take home, not what you look like on paper.
And there's so many businesses out there that may not be making any money. They're just taking money in. Money is coming in. Money's going out. But what's the bottom line? You know, are you paying yourself? Mm-hmm. You know,
we've told clients they'd be better off not being in business, and they'd be better off making $10 an hour minimum wage. Because I had a client that lost money he was a new client and he lost money for like 13 years. And in year 14, he says, Mike, I made $8,000. I says, well, in those past 13 years, if you just worked at $10 an hour, you'd have X amount of dollars versus the 50 to 100 grand you've invested to get to make 10 or 20 grand. And again, the bookkeepers, you know, just feel, oh, you lost another 10, you lost another 10. Mm-hmm. Somebody should have taken a time out and said, you know.
That's right, because you can think that you can think that you're doing well. And but then when you actually run the numbers, I'm a great fan of that show, what's it called, Shark Tank.
Yeah.
You know, when people have these business ideas, they're presented to these sharks that are in the room, and they're saying, okay, well, how much have you did? How much was your expenses? Right. Bam. So you actually haven't made any money.
Right.
You know, you spent this, you got that. And you know, to watch them on the show said, yes, but we've put our heart, we've put our soul, we believe, you know, and you know,
I haven't eaten in 3 months and we're doing great. Yeah, we just need that extra $20,000 to get over the hump.
Exactly. All right. Well, I want to, as we wrap things up here, I wanted to just plug my guests a little bit more. We had Amy Chavez on the program. Her firm is R&A CPAs. That's RANDACPAs.com. And their main phone number for their office is 520-881-4900. You could also see her on LinkedIn and Facebook. We're going to put these on the links inside the show notes that you can see on TucsonBusinessRadioX.com. Also, Michael Flowers, his information is again FlowersRieger.com. That's FlowersRieger.com. And he can also be found on LinkedIn and the Facebook page. And we'll put that on. The main phone number for his firm is 520-327-8706. Okay. Is that?
And Aaron, we offer a no charge initial consultation, regardless what state you're in. My goal in life, somewhat, is to, you know, if you're going into business and you shouldn't be in business, then, you know, maybe that's the advice you need.
Okay. We want to thank our guests on the show. We hope all of our listeners learned something about technology as it relates to accounting and finance. Listen to new episodes of Tucson Tech Talk every second Monday of the month. Tucson Tech Talk is sponsored by Computer Doctor of Tucson, because technology is great when it works. Until then, be safe and know your technology.